The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
This week has been a little crazy. Sit back and get your recap of what happened and what is happening in sports, entertainment, movies, TV, politics, technology, and current events. You can count on getting a dose of comedy, great guests, fun, the best talk around, and even more outrageous fun. That's why we love those two guys. Fun, fascinating, and real. We are live with the Brian and Lee Show. So unbelievable, we could not make this stuff up, even if we tried.
Well, it's great to be back here on another Friday morning in the Delaware Valley.
I'm Brian.
I'm Lee.
And this is the Brian and Lee Show, coming at you on WWDB 860 AM.
It's good to be here, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's great to be anywhere, to tell you the truth, especially in this heat.
Yeah. First day of summer.
Yes, it is.
Oh, man. I love summertime.
Of course.
It's the first day of summer. Man.
Mm-hmm. Remember, no singing.
Well, you know.
Because I know you want to be singing in the summertime.
Well, you know, in the summertime blues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got women on your mind.
Wow. It's hard to believe, you know.
Yeah, it's already summer. I can't believe it.
You know, and it's almost the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
And that means July will be here.
That means my birthday will be here very soon.
Your birthday, my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
The headquarters, you know, will be here.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Now, here's the real question. Is the heat on or is the humidity on?
The humidity is on.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that's a debate that everybody seems to have. It's not heat, it's humidity.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah.
It is what it is. What is it? Humidity?
It's humidity. Yeah.
Exactly.
But isn't, you know, the last few days have been pretty brutal out there.
It has been pretty brutal, yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's in the 90s, it feels like over 100. And I'm drinking plenty of fluids.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you got to do in this weather.
And remember, every time the heat is on, air conditioner is on, he blows a fuse.
Yeah, that's right.
And guess who always has to change it?
Yeah. Ooh.
I heard that, young man.
Mr. Fix It.
Pretty much.
Mr. Fix It. Setting up the railing and everything.
Exactly.
But still not tight.
Still not tight, no.
Yeah, so... What do you do?
It's loosey-goosey.
Yeah, but you're going to tighten up.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So, the heat's on. We're having fun. It's summertime. Means ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of ice cream. It means down the shore. It means boardwalk. Johnson's.
Johnson's popcorn, exactly.
Angelo Pizza, Mac and Manco.
Macco and Manco.
Manco and Manco pizza.
Yeah, Mac and Mac is somewhere else.
Not to mention water ice.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Gallons of water ice. That's what we need.
And what are those things with all the colors on it that you put on top of ice cream?
Those are Jimmies.
That's right. It's Jimmies, not sprinkles.
No, not sprinkles. And it's, you know, the sandwich that has meat and cheese and onions and lettuce and tomato.
And mayo.
No, oil.
That's called a hoagie.
Yeah, it's not a submarine.
Who calls it a submarine?
Yeah. Well, if you're not in Philly, they call it a submarine.
No. They call it a sub.
Yeah, sub. Well.
I don't use the full term.
But that's where it comes from. Mm-hmm. Submarine.
Yeah, it looks more like a torpedo than a submarine.
Yeah, so there you go. And, you know, not bad.
There's that going on. There's also the Phillies going on. They're still on fire.
They're on fire.
That's right.
Well, what's this mean?
What's this mean?
Yeah, they're doing very well. They're at the top of their game.
They're at the top of their division.
You know what that means, though.
Mm-hmm.
People will be gunning for them.
Of course, people will be gunning for them.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know what happens when Philadelphia teams get a big lead?
Mm.
They lose it. I'm thinking of 1964.
I figured you would say that.
I'm thinking of 93.
No. 93, we won it.
We did?
Yeah, we didn't give away the whole lead. It did vanish from 11 to like four games at one point,
yeah,
but we did win the division, go on to the World Series.
Yeah, but we lost the World Series.
We lost the World Series, yes, but at least we got there.
Yeah, we got there.
It was not like 1964.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But getting there and losing is not fun.
Getting there is half the fun.
But that's no fun to lose it all. Come on.
No kidding.
Wouldn't you rather be the winner
mm-hmm.
than a loser like that? I don't know. Yeah, I would. But, the Phillies are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens after the All-Star game break.
That's right. I forgot what night it was. I think it was this past week, though, that Cole Hamels was retired as a Philly. He signed a one-day contract with the team and then retired.
So they brought him back?
Yeah.
Retired his number?
No, not his number, just himself as a pitcher.
Oh, just himself. Okay.
Yep. Right. You got to make it to the Hall of Fame in order to get your number retired.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know what the...
Yeah, if you think about it, everybody that's retired out on the wall, they're all in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I never thought about it.
I never did either until somebody told me about that.
Yeah, I think that's great.
And that
great.
Definitely makes sense.
I think so, too. Yeah, summertime, it's nice and easy. It's, do you like summer, Colin? Colin's back with us today.
Yeah, of course. Who doesn't like summer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
I haven't met anybody yet who doesn't like summer.
What's your favorite food, summertime foods?
Summertime food? I don't know. I guess water ice. I like Rita's.
Mm. Yeah, Rita's. We like Pops.
Yeah, there was one in Havertown. I used to live back there on like Eagle Road. I know there's a Pops that everyone likes.
That's right.
Wow. I thought it was only in South Philly, but
so did I.
You're saying there is a Pops there. Wow.
Yep, right in like the center area, Delco there.
Okay. There you go.
And now it seems like Wawa is sprouting out everywhere.
Well, it's the Wawa Hoagie Fest.
That's right.
Yeah. So, because of the 4th of July, I guess. So now they...
They're opening up a lot more, especially the super gas stations.
They do a hoagie fest.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hoagie the other day that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
You bought it for me.
That's right, and I bought it from an actual deli.
Yeah, where they sliced the meat right mm-hmm. on the roll, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a real hoagie.
Mm-hmm. And you know how you know it's a real deli?
Oh.
They had blood orange soda.
Oh, okay.
Huh? Only real Italian delis have that.
Yeah, that's right. Or Italy.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Italy, do they have it there?
You don't get the soda. You get the actual juice itself.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
The blood orange juice?
Correct.
Huh. But if you put some seltzer in it, you get a soda.
Yeah, that's right. And you put corn syrup in it or whatever.
Yeah. Why can't you do that?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You could.
I don't know. They want the real thing.
We got a great show for you today. Coming up, Tim Wendell is going to be with us. He's an award-winning writer. And his current book, Rebel Falls, it's a historical novel. We're looking forward to talking to him about this.
Is he going to tell you something that you don't know about the Civil War?
Maybe.
Because you seem to think you know everything about the Civil War.
I know a lot about the Civil War. Not everything, but I know a lot about it. This particular thing that he's going to talk about is very interesting because it's based on fact,
mm-hmm.
But and he's written a novel, some fiction with it. But it's based on fact.
That's right.
This really happened. So we're going to see what he thinks about the Civil War. Yeah. About the end of the Civil War and about what Lincoln had to face. And about the plot to keep Lincoln.
That's right. They were keeping him hidden in his Gettysburg Address.
Yeah, no, they were they were trying to not have him reelected because nobody really liked Lincoln that much.
Of course not.
South, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I thought they had him. They tried to hide him away to make sure he didn't get shot.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But it was strange, you know. What are some of your favorite foods that you like for summertime?
Oh, summertime, definitely ice cream.
Definitely pizza.
Pizza, water ice.
Yeah.
Basically just about anything you can grab at a ballpark.
Johnson's Pizza, Johnson's Popcorn.
Right.
Yeah, we like that.
There's no such thing as Johnson's Pizza.
Okay.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet. Not yet. So, the debate is coming up.
Oh, yes.
Trump and President Biden.
Yeah, and they're bringing back the isolation booths, aren't they?
No, they're not doing that.
They're not doing that? They should.
But here's
so that way you can shut off the microphone of the person who shouldn't be talking.
Well, that's what they're going to do. They're going to shut your mic off once you hit the time limit. They're going to shut your mic off. My question is, because we did this at the other station that we worked for, you know, if your mic goes out, what you're supposed to do is walk over to the other person's mic and use his mic.
Now, you see,
how many times have we did that?
The difference is that was out of necessity.
Yeah.
This time, I'm pretty sure they're going to have an armed guard on the stage.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. You know,
you can't touch your candidate or your opponent.
Yeah, you're going to. Well, if the mic is on, it's going to pick up sound, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if he's screaming stuff, it's going to pick it up. And if I move towards the mic, it's going to pick it up.
I guess.
So how do you do that? Do you shut off both mics? That's the only way you could do it.
No, you can't do that.
I'm just wondering, you know. How would you do that, Mr. Engineer? How would you do you shut off both mics?
I don't know. I'd be uncomfortable with that job in any which way.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're
I would
get,
say the only thing you can do is turn. I think the only thing you can do is turn off the lapels and put a boom on.
Huh.
Don't you think so, Colin?
A boom?
Mm-hmm. A boom microphone.
Well, they don't have lapel mics. I think they're going to.
Oh, they're going to actually have mics on the stand?
I don't know. I think they should give them like wand mics, like.
Yeah, well, they do that for the town hall.
Yeah, for the game shows.
Right, exactly.
You know,
you remember the town hall debate?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's what they do. They have the handheld mics to walk around.
It's going to be
and look uncomfortable.
It's going to be interesting because it's going to be in a studio. There's not going to be any audience, and they're going to play to the camera. You know, they're going to play to
the people.
The people. Yeah, you know, I think they're going to have to do that.
Wrong.
Yeah, but I think it should be interesting.
It's going to be muffled, but you know you're going to hear that from him.
Yeah, you're
wrong.
I'm being mistreated.
Exactly.
It's totally unfair. Totally unfair.
Exactly.
That's what
are you going to accept what happens in this election if it's fair?
Right, and it's not going to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This debate is going to be a little crazy.
Nothing to him is fair. Hopefully they learned their lessons from the last election because that first debate made me physically ill.
Yeah, well, I think that's why these have new rules on it.
Exactly.
So,
because they obviously don't want a repeat of that.
No, No, you don't want to repeat. But like the first debate, Kennedy-Nixon debate,
mm-hmm.
that was in a studio, no audience.
I thought they did have a small audience.
Yeah. Few people, but nothing.
Like stagehands that were supposed to be the audience.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah. But I think they'll get around to having great things.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking forward to it.
Exactly. That's what I did at my game show when I did it in college.
Yeah?
Yeah. Whoever was not running the equipment, they had to play the audience.
And they clapped?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, there you go.
Because we had a floor director that was giving the old signal.
Well, I'm sure each opponent is going to have their own team. Each candidate
mm-hmm.
will have people that are working on the candidate's behalf.
Exactly.
And they'll be there. Yeah.
They'll be taping everything, and then they're going to edit it into hate videos.
Right. I think so. Or something like that.
Something like that.
Hey, we're going to come back in a few minutes with our guest. Can't wait to talk to Tim Wendell. We'll be right back after these messages.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, now go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
It started with the original care package, helping survivors in the aftermath of World War II. And for almost 80 years, CARE has been delivering hope around the world in the form of supplies to those in crisis, combating climate change, and generating solutions to the world's biggest problems. Our story for a better world is only starting. Join us to secure a better future for her at CARE.org.
My name is Corporal Bradley Joseph Seitz.
Jerry Reed.
Kate Weber.
These are real veterans facing a real challenge.
I have PTSD.
And I have PTSD.
I have PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress disorder can happen to anyone.
I was still in a war zone in my mind.
But treatment can turn your life around.
Treatment has really saved my life.
To learn about PTSD and how treatment can help you, call your local VA medical center or visit ptsd.va.gov.
Okay. When it comes to the father and son team, you gotta listen to Brian and Lee. It's the only way to go. They entertain some of the coolest things from the past to the future to right now. So tune in.
You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, The Brian and Lee Show.
And it's great to be back here on another Friday morning in the Delaware Valley. And
it's a real privilege and a pleasure to have on the guest line today. Tim Wendell is an award-winning writer. His new book, Rebel Falls, is a historical novel, and it's based on real information and about the Civil War. Tim, how are you today?
Guys, good to be with you.
It's great to have you here.
Great to have you here. And why the Civil War, may I ask?
Why the Civil War?
I mean, I love it. I love the Civil War. Yeah, I
Our
love
most
it.
Complicated of wars, which, yeah. I don't know, we still seem to be debating, at least the narrative about it even today. So, but this story, Rebel Falls, guys kind of reached out to me. I'm a history buff, and I started reading about this potential act of piracy on the side, you know, on behalf of the Confederates.
Mm-hmm.
Late in the summer of 1864, where they were starting to target the only remaining Union warship on the Great Lakes. And if they had seized that, it could have tipped the balance of power, certainly before the presidential election, and maybe Abraham Lincoln loses re-election. So, I love history, and this is happening in the Great Lakes. I grew up near Niagara Falls, Lake Ontario, Lake Erie. And I kept going, how come I never heard about this in school? Maybe I would have gotten a better grade or something. I would have been more interested. So, but it was a lot of fun to research. And I think that's the great thing about history is, you know, if a couple things go a little bit different direction, then the world as we know it is maybe a little bit different today.
Yeah. I think the Civil War is what I call one of my favorite wars. You know, I have a few that are really good. And
I said this last week, and I'll say it again this week. There are no good wars.
Well, yeah, I was going to think on that. Yeah, but there's good characters and good stories.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's true.
And certainly they bring out maybe the courage, the bravery, and just kind of the intestinal fortitude brings out the best in people. And again, I don't mean to belabor my poor high school teachers, but I wish I had learned more about, you know, some of the characters in something like Rebel Falls as opposed to memorizing battles and dates and such, because it's the people that come alive. I think that's what we remember.
Have you been to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, to the battlefield there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been there repeatedly. And again, I think in some ways, I only have understood it in a basic level the last maybe couple times I've gone. And you look at the Civil War, guys, the North and the South are totally different approaches. You know, for the North to win, they need to conquer territory. They need to defeat Lee's army. They need to, you know, take Atlanta, Richmond, et cetera. Whereas Lee and the South is fighting a totally different type of thing. They're almost doing like guerrilla warfare, almost a terrorist campaign.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, you guys bring up Gettysburg, and I always look at that third day, Pickett's charge. I've hiked it with my kids, and a part of me just goes, what was Lee, what was the South thinking here, going across more than a quarter mile of open area? But I think they were so desperate to do something to bring Great Britain in, bring in the European powers. That's what they were looking to do. And that's what they're looking to do in the Great Lakes late in 1864, too. Almost like, I don't want to use a sports metaphor too much, but it was a Hail Mary pass.
Yeah.
Bring in international powers that potentially would save the Confederacy.
Well, you mentioned Pickett's charge, and you're right. You know, you look at that landmass that they had to cover, you know, in the face of cannon fire and you know, you say to yourself, you know, what would lead somebody to want to do that, you know? I mean, it's just, you know, there's a chance that it may work, but I mean, your common sense tells you it's not gonna happen for you, you know. But what I realized when going to Gettysburg is that if the Confederates win that battle, the whole thing changes. You know, the whole thing changes
because the Confederates again they're looking to bring in outside powers. In a sense, again, especially Great Britain. And Great Britain was kind of the power broker in the 1860s, certainly in 1864 when Rebel Falls was taking place on the Great Lakes. And several times they're almost on the verge of coming in, which would have potentially saved the Confederacy. But, you know, a couple of things go sideways and it doesn't quite happen. And I think for sure if the Confederates had been able to seize the remaining Union warship on the Great Lakes in 1864 called the USS Michigan, 163 feet, iron-hulled, steam and sail-driven, and their plan was to bombard Toledo, Cleveland, and Buffalo on the eve of the presidential election. And I think Abraham Lincoln probably loses at that point, and who knows, maybe the Confederacy remains to this day.
Yeah, or maybe the person that becomes president is more apt to negotiate with them.
Very much. Yeah. And certainly that was potentially the case with McClellan, who was Lincoln's opponent. He was already kind of siding with the Copperheads, who were looking to kind of let the Confederacy go. And it's funny, I think sometimes, maybe it's the way, we're taught in school, but everything's maybe kind of lockstep and everything seems to be perfectly, you know, balanced and such. That kind of opens up a whole different front. I was just recently up in Auburn, New York, at the Seward House. And William Seward was Secretary of State under Lincoln, goes on and buys, you know, Alaska from the Russians, which he was criticized for at the time. And he was of the mind, especially early on in the war, if the North loses it, and it looks like they were, you know, you look at the first couple battles of Bull Run, you look at, say, even Antietam's a draw, that type of thing. He was of the mind, and there were a couple other members in Lincoln's cabinet saying, well, if we lose the South, maybe we just focus on Canada, focus on British Canada. And that's one reason Britain was really watching our Civil War intently. Number one, they felt they could maybe play a power broker and come in and, you know, do some things to their own devices. But the other reason was, there's a lot of armies at play right now. And if for some reason the Union is defeated or lets the South go, potentially they could turn that power and might upon British Canada and look and start take that over.
Well, didn't the Confederacy have operations in Canada?
Very much. And it wasn't armies. And this is something, guys, that I was stunned to find out in researching Rebel Falls, is they had a very extensive spy network, pretty much extending from Montreal all the way back west to Detroit. And they were well-financed. They had two of the guys who were real-life characters that are in my book, Rebel Falls, John Yates Bell and Bennett Burley. They were part of a whole group called the Northwest Conspiracy. And again, what they were trying to do is generate international incidents that, again, could maybe bring in Great Britain, other European powers, because they could go, what's going on over there? And one of the things I just found out that was amazing, John Wilkes Booth, of course, the assassin of Abraham Lincoln, who, you know, is killed in Port Royal, Virginia, 12 days after he assassinates the president. And when they pull him out of that barn where he's been killed, they empty his pockets. And they find some typical stuff, change, pocket knife, a diary he was keeping, which was kind of interesting. He thought he was going to be welcomed once he got below the Mason-Dixon line as this savior, this conquering hero. And, of course, that wasn't the case. But the thing that really blew their minds was they found this banknote for a significant sum of money, and it was with a bank in Montreal, Canada. That's where a lot of the money was being funded, kind of from Richmond up through Canada, and people like John Wilkes Booth were kind of the bagmen and such. And we know right now for sure that maybe not so much the assassination plot, but the first plot to kidnap Lincoln was hatched in Canada. So I don't know. Canada, we tend to think of as innocent and benign. It sure wasn't in the Civil War.
Very interesting. Very interesting stuff. Yeah, yeah. And had, you know, one of those plots succeeded, we might be talking with Southern accents today. I don't know.
Maybe the map may look a lot different.
Oh, well, definitely
yeah,
would.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely would.
Would not be 50 states.
No.
But there might be a couple Canadian provinces. Who knows?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, without a doubt. The other thing that is interesting to me about at least the Battle of Gettysburg is the heat, because I was there in July, very humid weather, and I was wearing shorts and a T-shirt. These people were wearing, the soldiers weren't wearing shorts and a T-shirt. You know, they
not,
were wearing
not
wool,
at all.
Yeah, wool uniforms. Yeah, and you just you know, it's things like that that just say to me, "Gee, you know, how could they put up with this?" You know,
just the fervor and the passion on both sides. I mean, you talk about conditions. Why put up with that? And then one of the guys in Rebel Falls, who I just alluded to, John Yates Bell, was very much a Southern sympathizer, came from Virginia. His first, role in the Civil War, he was part of the Stonewall Brigade. So he's wearing those wool uniforms, and he's out there and at Bull Run and et cetera. Then he got wounded, and it would have been very easy for him to just kind of pack it in, you know, okay, I can't be part of the infantry anymore. Instead, he turned to piracy. First, he did a bunch of piracy on the Chesapeake Bay. And then when they were looking to open up this third front on the Canadian border, he's one of the guys the political leaders in Richmond turned to and said, can you do some, create some mayhem on the Great Lakes because we're losing this war? And he jumped on it. He said yes. And some of the things they were dreaming up, you had acts of piracy potentially on the Great Lakes. We had banks being robbed in St. Albans, Vermont, where Confederate spies and, you know, some degree of troops, not many, rode across the border and robbed like four banks in an afternoon. And again, it seems like, you know, kind of flies around a horse or something. But again, what they're trying to do is create interest from Europe and just say, hey, you know, pay attention. We're creating, you know, we're much more viable than you think we are. And there's a great nonfiction book out called A World on Fire by Amanda Foreman. And she feels that these incidents, if one of them had created more of a spark, really ignited something, we would have had the first World War in the 1860s, as opposed to 1911, 12, whenever it took off over in Europe. Mm-hmm. That's how close we were in things. Because, again, our Civil War, 1861-65, was like the magnet. It was like, you know, all the other countries are moths being drawn to the flame. What's going on over in the U.S.?
Well, I look forward to reading Rebel Falls, available on Amazon and where books are sold.
Yeah, well, I hope you enjoy it. I think people.
I would be remiss because our Philadelphia Phillies are doing so well this year.
They are doing well. I was just talking baseball the other day with somebody. They're going, I predicted it was going to be the Orioles versus the Phillies. I'm going, well, that would be quite the World Series.
So that would be interesting. Yeah, that would be interesting. Yep. You can jump in your car and
You just go back and forth. It would be like the hockey playoffs where these guys are flying thousands of miles right now. But
exactly.
No, but I think any of your guys, listeners that are into historical fiction, and a great many of the characters in Rebel Falls are real, true, viable ones. I did a ton of research with this, and I think they'll enjoy the story. It's a little bit of a what if, and certainly an overlooked chapter or episode to our most complicated of wars.
The reason I mentioned the Phillies is that you wrote a baseball book, a book about baseball. Did you not?
Yeah, I've written actually several. That was another life with me, but I still really enjoy baseball, as you can tell. And I did a number of them. Summer of 68, the 68 World Series. Another one called High Heat, where I went and searched the fastest pitcher of all time. So I got to hang out with Bob Feller and Nolan Ryan and people like that for a little while. That was very interesting.
I would imagine it is. Yeah, I would imagine. And Summer of 68, what is that about?
Pretty much, it's, you know, there's been a great many books, guys, written about 1968, arguably our most tumultuous of years. In fact, as my friend Hampton Side says, the closest maybe we've come to a second civil war in this country. And so there's been a lot written politically, even musically. And what I decided to do is bring sports kind of to the forefront. It still deals a little bit with Dr. King's assassination, Bobby mm-hmm. Kennedy's assassination, but it's through the lens of sports and predominantly the two teams that meet in the World Series, which are the Detroit Tigers and St. Louis Cardinals, which were very much teams in tune with what was going on in the country. And I think both of them had kind of decided, let's do the best we can and, in a sense, try to win, to try to hold the country together. And I think sports in a lot of ways did. You had those two epic teams. You had Bill Russell and the Boston Celtics. Sports was amazing at Mexico City Olympics. And so something mm-hmm. held us together. And I think it was sports, predominantly baseball, especially with those two outstanding teams. The Cardinals, of course, had like Bob Gibson and Tim McCarver and Roger Maris. And, you know, it went on and on. And then the Tigers had, you know, Willie Horton, Denny McClain, the last 30-game winner. There's so many things in that year in terms of baseball, you're going, yeah, that's, we're never going to see that again. I don't think we're ever going to see a 30-game winner like McClain. I don't think we're ever going to see a guy like Gibson who had an earned run average for the season of 1.16. I don't think we're going to see that again. Yeah, and then the other reason I like 68 in terms from a baseball standpoint is we didn't have, you know, I kind of like them, but we didn't have all these wild cards and divisions and division winners. It was literally just two leagues, National League and American League, and the number one team, the first place team from each went directly to the World Series. That's the last time that's right. happened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
I was going to ask you about the what do you think about the the rule changes, some of the rules, the new rules.
Oh, I see where they're coming from, but I must admit, I tripped over one guy's, where was I? Like 2 years ago, I think I was out in Denver, and I'm at a game with the Rockies, and it went to extra innings. And I keep score. And suddenly we automatically get a guy on second base, you know, as we start extra innings.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sat there going, how am I supposed to put this down? How does this work? I was really kind of flummoxed. And so, I don't know. I realize what they're trying to do is make it attractive to a younger audience. And,
exactly.
You know, people like my son and and more power to him.
I would recommend that if you go to extra innings, you would start it off with just the drawing of a ghost, since they call it a ghost runner.
And call him Casper?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Nah, I think it's all fine. If it keeps younger eyeballs on it, fine. But I like to, you know, I'm an old dog. I guess I got to learn some new tricks, but it's fun. Yeah.
No, but Lee was not a big baseball fan, but he was always saying for years, it needs a clock.
Yeah. I've been advocating this since the 60s, actually.
Holy no, you were well ahead of your time. Well, yeah. How come they didn't listen to you decades ago?
Well, you know, I'm in ahead of my time, and mm-hmm. and they just didn't pick up on what I was saying, you know. So, but they finally got it, you know, which is great.
Well, that's the other funny thing. You know, you're talking about the clock, and in 68, they obviously didn't have a clock, and they didn't need it. When I was writing Summer of 68, at one point I was talking with Tim McCarver, and Tim said, have you looked at any of the games that Gibson pitched? And I went, yeah. And he goes, okay, go back and look at them. I want you to time how long he's taking between pitches. And I went, okay. And I went through, he was taking like about an average of 15 to 19 seconds between pitches, especially when he was really throwing the ball. And then I got back to McCarver and I went, yeah, you're right. He was just bringing it.
Mm-hmm.
And McCarver goes, yeah, as soon as I threw the ball back, I had to get down on my crouch. I had to get the next signal out to him because he's ready to go. And those games are being done in like 2 hours, 5 minutes, hours,
yep. right.
10 minutes. And, you know, you could watch a game and still find time to have dinner someplace.
I mean, even in my generation, I'm watching a lot of the 93 Phillies on YouTube, and they're still like 2 hours and 3 minutes, 2 hours and five minutes. It's just a different type of game that doesn't exist anymore.
No. And you know, you get somebody like Nolan Ryan or certainly Feller, you know, and I was talking to those guys back when, you know, as Ryan told me one time, when he took the mound for a game, he expected to finish it, mm-hmm. you know, and the times he couldn't finish it, man, was lifted in the seventh or eighth. He was pretty irritated. He felt he had really kind of let down the team. Now it's a parade of mm-hmm. relievers and such, and that certainly slows it down.
That's yeah, true. Which I don't understand. If the starter is doing well, why take him out? You know, because he's thrown X number of pitches. Yeah. He's doing well.
Yeah. Don't get me started on pitch counts.
Yeah, I know.
Well, go back and look at some of the box scores, certainly from summer of 68 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Good God. I mean, Mickey Lolich, Denny McClain, they're throwing like 140, 150 pitches in a game and then going back out right. 4 or 5 days.
And again, going back to Nolan Ryan, even in 1980, you could tell when they took him out, he just didn't have anything left.
Yeah.
In the eighth inning of that game.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a totally different thing. And plus that, not to go totally off into baseball here, but I was talking with a friend of mine today who's kind of high up with the Tampa Bay Rays, and he was bemoaning so many of the injuries, pitching injuries. You know, everybody comes in and they're just trying to throw so hard, you know, and it's like pitch after pitch is fastball, you know, 90, 95 plus even. And it's burning everybody out. We've got tons of injuries, as you guys well know.
Oh, yeah.
And we're both going, you know, who we got to bring back is somebody like Jamie Moyer or somebody. You know, somebody that can, you know, change speed, throw a little bit of junk, throw some breaking stuff. And
exactly.
Where's Jamie Moyer when you need him?
I think the closest we've got to Jamie Moyer now is Ranger Suarez.
Yeah, that could be, but I think we need many more, but we got to clone these guys because everybody else is going to be hurt.
That's true.
Well, in a related story, in a former life, I worked for the owner of the Rays. So.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes.
And now they're trying to build a new stadium, and they got everybody hurt.
So, yeah, they're trying to do that, and well, I understand that there was a time when they were talking about moving the team to Montreal.
Yes, I did hear about that.
And then I got zinged. The Montreal probably should deserve a team. They got kind of shanghaied with their team. But now baseball is great and it plays. And it's funny, you guys bring up baseball, and I've done a number of baseball books. And even in Rebel Falls, baseball was starting to come on. I even snuck in a bit of a scene where there's a little bit of a baseball game happening. You know, it's kind of a makeup kids game, but that's a fun thing you can do with history is you just go, hang on, okay, both sides, both the North and the South, Confederates and Unions were playing baseball.
Sure.
Well, we're working a little baseball game. And
why not?
So why not? That's half the fun with this.
Absolutely. We're so divided as a country these days, you know. I think we're as divided or maybe more divided than when the North and the South got together back in the 1800s. But the country's pretty divided. What do you think about that? I mean, we fought a civil war over it. Do you think we could come together as a country?
Oh, I think so. But I think it's going to take a little bit. And I think what people tend to forget, and again, maybe I'm back to how history is perceived or dealt with generation to generation. But I agree with you guys. We're as divided potentially as we were 68 or even back in 1864. Mm. But history, to me, isn't something that's in stone tablets. You know, history is something we need to talk about generation to generation and come to some, at least some kind of groundswell agreement. And I think that's one of the mistakes we make with history is we just kind of, oh, that's the past. No, you know, it's up to each generation to, in a sense, deal with the past and how it's going to be remembered. And I think that's maybe one of the problems we have a little bit today. We're not talking about it enough, and we don't know our past as well as we should or we could. And that's, again, been one of the fun things, but also I think one of the rewarding things in writing Rebel Falls. You know, it's historical fiction, but it's very much based in fact. And I've just spent about the last month on the road going to different places. And again, time and time again, people have come up to me and just said, I never thought of it that way, or I never knew, you know, our Civil War was like that. You know, they only today, mm-hmm. you know, today people in the Civil, you know, think about the Civil War and they know Gettysburg, they know Vicksburg, you know, they know Antietam. They kind of know some of the battles, mm-hmm. but they really don't know what led up to the war, and they don't know how the war was maybe fought. And it's more, it's not just armies, it's ideas and principles. And I think, again, that's something, if you forget it, it forms a vacuum, and other things can kind of fill it in and be not as maybe forthright as correct or as correct as you had thought.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And you have to come back and talk to us again. We really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Oh, no, I appreciate it, too. Next mm-hmm. time we talk a little bit of Civil War, a little bit of baseball.
It was great.
I'm good with that.
That's right. Okay. Let's hope the Phillies can hold on to the end of the season, and then we can talk playoff baseball.
Very good. I think the Phillies are in pretty good shape, but we'll see. It's weird for me, guys, not to belabor it, but I'm becoming – well, I was born in Philadelphia, but I was barely there. My dad was in the Navy. Mm-hmm. But I watch the Phillies now with guys like Harper – and some of the other ex-Nats, and you know, I went to a lot of the games when the Nats won the World Series that year, and I'm kind of going, how come we couldn't have held on to half these guys? It looks like I'm looking at the old Nats, and so I kind of know the Phillies already.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You bet.
Well, thank you so much. You have a great weekend, and you'll come back, and we'll talk again.
Anytime you guys want. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Tim. And we'll be back right after these words.
The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts. Not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles. Or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena. Whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood. Who strives valiantly. Who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, then go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. It drove me crazy. It got so bad, I couldn't do my homework. I couldn't concentrate. I absolutely refused to let any of my friends come to our house for any reason. I would have been humiliated if anyone found out how much my dad drank and how loud my mom screamed at him. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful. The only thing that happened is my mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. Her relationship with my dad really changed. I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings or to Alateen. I wanted to see if I could have a better relationship with my dad. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon or go to alanon.org.
Okay. When it comes to the father and son team, you got to listen to Brian and Lee. It's the only way to go. They entertain some of the coolest things from the past to the future to right now. So tune in.
You're listening to the number one father and son team on radio, the Brian and Lee Show.
And we're back.
Yeah.
With a very important announcement, an exciting announcement.
Yeah.
My game show, Cinderella Story, is now available on Kindle.
Oh, it is?
It is.
Wow. There you go. So you
can order it physically or digitally.
Is it cheaper?
It is cheaper digitally.
Oh, there you go.
$4.99.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right.
And you get it immediately. You just buy, and then you can download it to whatever device you read on.
Yeah, yeah. Your iPad or a Kindle. Or,
exactly.
They still make the Kindle?
I think they do, but I don't see them around as much anymore.
I watched the by the way, that was a really good interview.
That was a very good interview, yeah. We definitely need to have him back.
I thank Tim Wendell for being here, and I am going to pick up his book.
That's right.
And read that, because it sounds like a really good story.
You could do it either physically or digitally.
Yeah, I could. I think I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I used to read on the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
But I might do that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Now you're more into audiobooks.
Yeah, seems. Yeah, because I like audiobooks too.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I'm driving, it gives me
something to listen to.
Something to listen to, you know, and it's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff. I listened to Apple, their web designer conference, and the opening keynote, and they're introducing some interesting stuff having to do with Apple. They call it Apple Intelligence, which is AI for Apple devices.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to improve Siri quite a bit. Because right now, Siri's not good.
No, it isn't.
It needs to be improved, and they're doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're gonna improve Siri, and I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we're in a whole new arena of AI.
Exactly.
You know, artificial intelligence. And I think the products that will be in the fall, you're going to have a whole new slew of upgrades to various operating systems of Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to it, because then you'll have real Apple intelligence. You'll have AI incorporated in the phone, in the iPad. You might have to buy a new one.
Maybe. You never know.
I don't know. It will be incorporated.
But here's another debate that I don't hear too many people talking about, but I've thought about it for a while.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy these press conferences on YouTube as opposed to, say, the Consumer Electronics Show?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen too many on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily on YouTube, but, I mean, you know, these press conferences about new technology, because that's usually what the CES was about.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like it. I like some of the stuff they mm-hmm. put out. I like the Apple stuff. Yeah, I like watching that stuff.
Exactly.
It usually is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I could speed through things that I'm not interested in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always nice.
But the reason why I asked that is because at CES, you also have the item in your hand, and you can check it out for yourself.
Yeah.
With these conferences, you don't have it yet.
Right. But you don't have to go either.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
So that's another good thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Kevin Costner's new movie that's coming out on the 28th.
Is it another baseball movie?
No, this is a Western.
Oh, okay.
An epic. It's called Horizon, and I'm looking forward to that.
The Horizon River.
Yeah. It's a three and a half hour movie, and that's only the first part. There's two parts to it. So good luck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it.
Remember when my sister said that the Neverending Story was too long?
Yeah.
And that was really only about an hour and 40 minutes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Imagine this, being in the theater for 3.5 hours.
Well, I'm not going to imagine it. I'm going to do it.
You're going to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it.
The last time we were in the theater for 3.5 hours was the concert.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. The Taylor Swift concert.
Taylor Swift concert, yes. And I would like to wish a happy birthday to my sister. She's years old.
Yeah.
Today.
Absolutely.
Happy birthday.
Today. Wow.
That's right.
Wow. There you go. And I'm going to say thank you for listening today. It's been really good. Be strong. Stay strong.
The Brian and Lee Show is a BLS production.